You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
El Huddle is a production of the NFL in partnership with iHeartRadio.
Hola, ¿qué tal? What's good, everybody? This is the El Huddle podcast. I'm Will Salva. My prima hermana, MJ Acosta Ruiz, is off. But people, I am not flying solo. I have somebody that you'll want to listen to, especially if you are a psycho or a millionaire. He's part of not one, but two wildly popular series slash franchises. You may have heard of them, Psych and A Million Little Things. He's an actor, director, writer, activist. Please, let's give a warm El Huddle welcome to James Rodé Rodriguez. What's viva, up, man?
Viva football, si. Will.
Muy bien. And I see that you got your friend there that's joining us on the podcast, but won't be saying much, really.
There he is. And when I sit like this, you'll just get his butt. So you got a little dog butt to help brighten your day.
Yeah, so what's his name?
That is Claude. He's a Frenchman.
Ah, okay. Claude, and I know for you, you've been involved with your Road Dogs Foundation, which really is dedicated to rehabbing and rescuing medical bulldogs and puppies with birth defects. Why is that such an important cause for you?
I adopted the Mastiff I had before Claude. His name was Franck. He was also a Frenchman. From this amazing woman, Nikki, who started and runs Road Dogs. And, you know, her mantra is that every dog, not unlike every child, you know, deserves a shot at, you know, some sort of life. And so she's basically dedicated her work to, you know, the puppies that nobody wants, the seniors that get left behind, you know, the smashed faces that have, you know, medical, you know, disabilities that come along with, you know, big fat, you know, medical bills. And I just think it's just so moving that those are the dogs that she's decided to help. And it's a wonderful organization, and it, you know, it's not necessarily for the squeamish. I mean, she has to endure a great deal of loss doing what she does. And I just have a ton of respect for her. And I will always be grateful to her because she gave me a dog that I was able to spend 10 solid years with. So, yeah.
Was Franck named after the character in that movie that was A Father of the Bride with Martin Short, or no?
No, Franck was named Frankie when I adopted him.
Ah, okay.
And he just didn't seem like a Frankie to me, you know. He was a little more dour and brooding and than a Frankie, I thought. And because he was a French Mastiff, you know, we didn't stray too far from the root word there, and just made him the French version. That's how that happened.
Well, right on, man. Keep it up. I mean, Road Dogs Foundation, I know that is a cause that's near and dear to your heart. Also near and dear to your heart is football. You are a big time fan. You were born and raised in San Antonio. So inevitably the question is, how in the hell did you become a Tennessee Titan fan?
Well, my entire family, the Mexican side, they're all in Texas and they're all hardcore Cowboy fans. And it wasn't really a choice. You're born into the Rodriguez family and you were given some sort of cowboy paraphernalia, you know, when you're 2 years old.
Right.
And I wasn't willing to accept like a preordained like fandom, you know? Yeah. And when I started watching football very early on, I liked Earl Campbell. I liked the Houston Oilers. They were always on the other channel that, you know, my dad would flip to during commercials. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this. And I immediately became something of a black sheep. I was the only non-Cowboy fan, I think, in the history of the family. But I really stuck to it. Those early Oilers teams when I was a kid were just horrible. But it was really fun to watch.
Sweet Earl unis, Campbell. Though, right?
Oh, great unis.
Yeah.
And, you know, Earl was just running over people, but then they would lose. And, you know, we went through some pretty fun eras. You know, we had the whole run and shoot thing for a while with
Jack Pardee
and Warren Moon, yeah. And four receivers, you know, split out wide and one back. And, you know, we could always get to the divisional round of the playoffs and then, you know, invariably we would lose. And then I got the whole Steve McNair era, which, you know, was our one trip to the Super Bowl with Steve and Eddie. So even though we have no titles to show for it, I have no regrets, none whatsoever making that decision. It's been a good ride. I just feel like when you're a long suffering fan, getting that Super Bowl trophy is just, it's got to be the sweetest fruit out there to get. So someday I will experience something that Cowboy fans have not, because, you know, if they were alive, you know, back when they were winning three Super Bowls, they you know, they took it. I think they probably took it for granted. I never will. And I just,
it's been a long time for them, James. A long time.
It's true. It's true. And it's been, you know, like, to be honest, I used to love watching the Cowboys be bad. And now they've been bad for so long that it doesn't even give me any satisfaction anymore. Like, I can't even troll my dad because I'm like, dude, I'm sorry. It's so there. I get it. You're me now. I just want one, you know, before I die. That's it. Just one.
James, you've had some really painful losses to endure. What was the most painful for you? Was it the 35-3 game against Buffalo, or was it the Super Bowl against the Rams?
I would say that the 35-3 loss was more painful at the time, because I really did think that that team had everything it took to go all the way. We were an offensive juggernaut, but we actually had some guys on defense that were making plays. And I thought, you know what? This is it. This is the year we get it done.
Loved Dishman.
It was a good team, man.
Yeah.
Super Bowl, I mean, it was such a magical ride. We had to, you know, we had to pull off the Music City Miracle to get there. We started to sort of have a team of destiny, like sort of aura about us, but I don't know that I didn't go into that season thinking, oh my gosh, we're Super Bowl contenders. So the fact that we got all the way there and made it close against the greatest show on turf, that was pretty awesome. But it was not expected. That was just sort of a delight. And, you know, as much as everyone likes to run that last play of Dyson coming up a yard short, we have to remember, all it would have done is allowed us to, you know, kick an extra point and tie the game. It's not like, if he gets in the end zone. We still would have to go to overtime and stop that offense again, probably, and who knows.
Well, that's what a lot of times people, when they look at Bill Buckner, they think, oh, wow, the ball got by him. But there was still another game to be played at that point in time, right? And so I think sometimes sports fans forget that stuff.
And that's why, you know, that's why it doesn't haunt me, you know, as much as the other one does.
Well, that makes sense. What was your first memory, would you say? Was it Earl Campbell just barreling into a Rams defender while his uniform was getting tugged at and torn off? Like, what was the first one that just grabbed you? What was the first memory?
You just nailed it. Because when I was that little, I don't even think I knew another player. I don't think I could name anybody but Earl Campbell. And I knew what, and I was kind of mostly only interested in watching when they were on offense and, you know, and he was running the ball. And I want to say that my first memory, they were playing the Colts, because I remember the other helmet having the horseshoe on it.
At the Astrodome?
at the Dome.
Okay.
And just watching Earl just be a, you know, a man among boys. That running style was just so brutal.
So and punishing, right?
Obviously he's paid this steep price for it, but boy, that was that was my intro to that team and to football as a whole. And you know, in many ways, the Oilers, even though they've gone through so many different iterations and coaches, they still are kind of, you know, not too far off from what they were back then. You know, they've kind of come full circle the way that they play physical smash mouth football and hand the ball to Derrick Henry 30 times a game.
Well, let me go through your Twitter here, okay? We're going to call this part of our interview, this segment, let's call it, read it and tweet. I will read you a couple of your tweets, and you tell me what you were thinking at the time when you typed it out. Cool?
Cool. Fair warning. I was hacked a while ago, so if it's too recent, it might not actually be me.
No, it's actually from 2022, so I don't know if you were hacked.
We're good. That's me.
Okay. All right. So let's start. This was in early September. Definitely. You had said, new year, same story. Let's tighten up and go to work. Now, what I take away from that tweet was the mentality that the Titans are seen as these underdogs. Is that what you were meaning to say with that tweet?
100%. Try to give my boys some bulletin board material. Nobody thinks you can get it done. Everybody's doubting you. Every year, regardless of what kind of offseason the Indianapolis Colts have, all of the pundits will line up and say, oh my gosh, no one's offseason is more exciting than the Indianapolis. Oh, this is Indy's year. They're obviously, you know, the pick to win it every year.
Yeah,
it's the same old broken record. So that's what that tweet meant. You're right. You nailed it.
Okay. All right. So let's keep going. This was from November 13th, 2022. It's hard not to daydream about someone with a little more ingenuity calling plays for this Titans offense. So am I to infer that you are not happy with the OC last season?
Yeah, I was part of a large contingent of Titans fans that really wanted to see him open up things. And it was frustrating at times, for sure.
Yeah, so now you have Tim Kelly, who's been elevated to offensive coordinator. What do you think of that move? Or are you just happy that they made a move, period?
Happy that they made a move. Always willing to give a new guy the benefit of the doubt. I think that's our job as fans, is not to condemn anything until we see it on the field. Same thing with people who bemoan draft picks. I'm like, look, I don't do this for a living. I wasn't out there scouting these guys. Like, you got to give them a shot, right? We got to believe in these guys. That's our job. So until they start, you know, pooping the bed on the field, I'm down. And I'm down to give Tim Kelly a shot. I mean, he was the passing game coordinator. Hopefully that means he's got a few, you know, other tricks up his sleeve. Like, we all know what we're dealing with. We've got a Hall of Fame back who's, you know, tiptoeing towards, you know, the tail end of his career. You're not going to be able to run him, you know, 350 times a game or a season anymore. So what else you got? And to be fair, that receiver room is a little thin. So I think Tim Kelly's probably got a decent amount of leash this year.
Yeah.
At least until we get him a few more pieces, to play with. So yeah, I'm excited to see what he's got, cooking.
All right. Well, James, one more tweet from you. And this was December 1st, 2022. Sometimes I wonder if A.J. Brown actually realizes that the Titans traded him to a team with an offensive scheme that better utilizes his talents, agreed to pay him exactly what he wanted, and put him next to one of the best of his best buddies. Like, .. You're welcome. No? What were you feeling there, dude?
Well, I didn't quite understand why AJ kept poking the bear so much on social media when, you know, he got such a great deal, you know? Like, it's like he couldn't let it lie It felt like he was sort of the engine behind any of the contention between him and the team. Whereas it's sort of like, dude, you're playing for a Super Bowl this year. Good for you. Love the player. Move on. We're the ones that are stuck trying to figure out what our offense looks like now. Mm-hmm. It just felt like he had this axe to grind, and I didn't quite understand what the axe was. He's sitting pretty.
Yeah, and I don't know if that was just part of he was feeling something, and sometimes he was cryptic about it, and then he stated what he was feeling. I don't know. I mean, it didn't seem like he was in the doghouse there. He was hurt a lot, but when he was on the field, he was pretty productive.
He was our passing game, you know, and if yeah. he asked for a number and the Titans weren't willing to pay it, you know, based on how we run an offense, you know, that's the business of football.
Yeah.
You know, you go find your money, and he did, and it worked out for him instantly. So I don't know. That was me after about 10 or 12 you know, reading 10 or 12 tweets from AJ that were like dogging Titans and Titans fans. I was just like, dude.
Yeah. So you are.
Good times.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
You are clearly a diehard fan. So diehard, in fact, that you had a chance to announce the 69th pick at the 2022 draft.
What's up? What's up? Tighten up. Everybody can tighten up. All right. Everybody knows night two is where the real action happens. That's right. I didn't even watch yesterday. Did I miss anything? Good. With the 69th pick. Hello. In the 2022 NFL Draft, our Tennessee Titans select Nicholas Petit-Frere, tackle, Ohio State. Welcome.
What was that like?
Pure bucket list. Three of my best buddies from high school and I went to Vegas, spent the weekend, as, you know, as part of that, all of that ceremony, all of that pageantry, you know, rub shoulders with some greats. Veterans and some current players and some draft prospects back in that green room. It was just awesome. And you know, getting 69 out of all the picks you can get. I mean, come on, that's just the cherry on the sundae.
It really is.
Yeah,
it really is. Were you at all concerned or worried that you would get a name that would be hard to say? You know, we love Chig Okonkwo. But yeah, these names, right, are hard sometimes, and it's a surprise. You don't know literally until just minutes before.
It's true. They do give you a card where the name is spelled out for you phonetically right underneath it.
I find that sometimes confuses me. You know, in the broadcast world, we have phonetic spellings, but sometimes the phonetic spelling actually trips me up more.
It's a lot because you realize you have the responsibility of being a part of a moment that, you know, this young man will remember for the rest of his life. Like, this is quite possibly like a life changing, you know, evening. And the last thing you want to do is go out there and say his name wrong or say his, you know, his family's name wrong. So yeah, you definitely there's a little bit of nerves. Yeah. And it's not like I got, you know, Jerry Smith. I got Nicholas Petit-Frere.
Right.
And I said it a couple times backstage to the NFL person that was there to make sure that, you know, I was at least in the ballpark.
You're a performer. did you feel nervous, or was this just a different kind of performance, so to speak?
Oh, I was so stoked. I wanted to go out there and get Titans fans as pumped up as humanly possible. And there were some there, which is great. You never feel like there's going to be like a heavy Titans contingency at the NFL draft. But sure enough, we had like a little pocket of pretty loud, you know, crazy fans tightening up.
Yeah, talk about a dream come true. Now you are, I believe, the third person I know that's done it. Kyle Brandt, my co-host on Good Morning Football, he did it a year ago. He announced the Bills pick, and then this year, Jason McCourty announced it for the Titans, coincidentally.
And that's right. He spent some time up there. He vamped.
Yes, he did. No, he was going scorched earth, dude. He went absolutely bonkers up there because Kyle had told him, hey, talk your bleep up there. Yeah. And he pumped up our show, and then people started taking strays, man, all up and down the division.
Yeah, it was fun. And they kept playing the little jingle to like tell him, like, announce the pick. I think they played it like three times while he was still talking.
No, J-Mac wasn't going to let go, man. This was his time, his moment. And obviously you can relate to that. Talking about this year's draft, the Titans decided to draft Will Levis out of Kentucky. You probably have read a bunch about him, has a bazooka of an arm. I think the interceptions were a little bit of a concern for people, but what did you make of that pick for the Titans?
Again, I'll echo what I said before. You know, new GM this year, Rand Carthen, and, you know, I feel like my duty as a fan is to believe that this new guy has a vision for our team and not immediately question every decision that he's making. So I'm totally fine with the pick. I'm glad
you're such a rational fan, James. Stop it. Knock it off already, okay?
You know,
Come on.
There did come a point where – I was scratching my head a little, and I'm happy to share that. But as far as the Levis pick went, you know, my worry was that they were going to trade up in the first and give away our entire draft and maybe a first round pick next year. That would have been a lot tougher to swallow. But the fact that we got him, you know, in the second, and it really only cost us a third next year, I think is much, much better value. And
sure,
you know, they obviously met with the guy, you know, felt good about him. Like I said, we know the tools are there. Heard some things about him coming off as maybe a little serious, you know, robotic, full of himself in some of his combine meetings. But I would just remind everybody that, you know, Joe Burrow isn't exactly the poster boy for humility either. And
he brings a lot of swag, man. He brings a lot of swag. It's always that fine line between swag and confidence, right? And arrogance.
100%. And these are kids, we have to remember. And as long as he shows up and is respectful and works hard, let's give him a shot. It's obvious that quarterback is a position that that, you know, we need to address for the future. Tannehill's on his way out. Malik, you know, through no real fault of his own, was kind of thrown to the wolves last year, I think way before he was ready.
Yeah. Then it was somewhat of an indictment on him, maybe the team, that they had to bring in Josh Dobbs.
Not a good look,
at
man.
One point, you know, and that was not a good look.
I felt bad for the kid. So we're probably looking at a future of Will Levis and I'm stoked. I mean, dude, what if he's awesome? I'm down. The place they lost me a little bit was waiting until the seventh to take a receiver.
You would have wanted it sooner.
There were some guys sitting there in the fifth and sixth when they took the tight end and another tackle that, you know, coming to the Titans is a pretty great situation for a receiver because you have an opportunity to like get on the field right away. And all I can figure is that they just must not have had those guys anywhere close
you know, to the top of their board, you know, like the Tyler Scotts, the A.T. Perrys, like those guys whose college production was like, you know, legit, speedy guys, tall guys that could come down, you know, make contested catches. I mean, guys that we need on that team,
right?
That they passed over time and time again. So they must have been following their board, and they must not have thought much of this receiver class. Unless they plan on, I don't know, hosing off Kenny Golladay or something, it feels sort of like what it is what we got.
Right. Right. Well, honestly, it's clear by talking to you, you know your stuff, you know your football. I know that you were in a celebrity fantasy football league with a bunch of guys. Dez Bryant was one of them. I think The Miz was in there, a bunch of other celebrities. Do you play fantasy football with some of your castmates from A Million Little Things and Psych?
I take fantasy football very seriously. It's probably the closest thing to like a vice or a side hustle that I have. So
you're in multiple leagues then, I'm assuming, just by that statement. Leagues,
I yeah. play high stakes.
How many?
Against, you know, those guys and gals who basically treat it like professional poker, you know, in the NFFC and the FFPC. And then I also have my charity leagues that I do. I do one in the NFFC to raise money for pediatric cancer. And then I've been doing Michael Fabiano's for the last couple years.
Yeah, Fabs.
Fabs is awesome. He has Sling as a sponsor for his league, and everybody gets to play for a charity, and that's awesome.
Well, I mean, clearly you are really into fantasy football. Did you ever win at all any of these leagues?
That's the poison that keeps me coming back.
Of course it does, man.
I had some really big years early on. When I first started in the NFFC, and I made some real money. And so I convinced myself that I really was one of the best high stakes fantasy football players in the world. And it's been some really lean years since then. Mm-hmm. But I can't stop now. You know, it's in my blood. It's just, it's part of my DNA. But I have not had the success, I would say, in the last 6-7 years that I did when I first started. It's tough, man. It's tough to compete with these players that pretty much do it as a job, you know?
I mean, they're on it, right? They're reading things, and they are combing that waiver wire looking for the best finds and saying, okay, DeAndre Hopkins, he's not going to be starting the season, but he'll be coming off that list, and then you gotta stash them, right?
It's I always feel like I'm about 10 minutes behind everybody, and that's really all it takes. Same thing with baseball too, like, because I also do fantasy baseball, and it's like the Fab results will come in, and
God,
it's just,
bless you, you do a baseball fantasy league too.
I do and it's just too often that, you know, you see the first name on the list of Fab, and I'm like, I've never heard of that guy. Like, how could he have gone for $650? And it's usually some kid pitcher that got called up and I missed it. But these people do not miss it. It's not like in your home league when you're the best player and, you know, you can kind of just, you're toying with people and dominating. You go up to the high stakes leagues and you realize, oh my gosh, I am those poor bastards in my home league now.
You're talking about like toying with people. It felt like you were toying with people's emotions in that finale of A Million Little Things. I mean, talk about a heartbreaker, man. I mean, that gets you right there in the heart. You were such a beloved character. How did you prepare for that? And what kind of reaction have you gotten since then?
Well, the good news is I knew that was coming for quite some time. It wasn't like, it wasn't thrust upon me. Like, you know, there's a great story about Ray Wise who played Leland Palmer in Twin Peaks. And, you know, David Lynch brought him into a room with just a lava lamp like the week before they were shooting the last episode of season one, and nobody knew who had killed Laura Palmer. And he sat Ray down and he was like, "Ray, it's you. It's always been you, Ray." And he kind of just melted because he had this much time to process the fact, you know, that he had killed his own daughter. Luckily, I knew that, you know, Gary, this was the way Gary was going to go out for a while, for multiple seasons. And, you know, it was just about making sure that it felt earned and that we were able to sort of hit every point along the way of telling the story so that, you know, when we did it, we felt like, you know, we were doing it for the right reasons. We were doing it authentically. We were showing reverence and respect and not just kind of drum up, you know, the most emotionally manipulative, you know, finale that we could. So we would check in with each other periodically, the show creator and I, you know, over the last few seasons to make sure that we felt like we were still on track with it. So I did have, it was a long play. I was obviously sworn to secrecy, but, sure. But I knew it was coming. And it's still like, once you shave your head and have your eyebrows covered up and, you know, and you're spending hours in makeup to become someone who, you know, who looks that ill, it's still still jarring. It's still triggering. It hits you pretty hard how many people have fallen to this awful, awful disease and how many families have had to say their goodbyes. It's a lot. And you want to sort of represent it, you know, like I said, with as respectfully and truthfully as you possibly can. And then you just feel incredibly appreciative that at the end of the day, you know, you get to go take that makeup off and you get your eyebrows back and you just, you know, you realize how beautiful every day is and how you can never take it for granted.
It was powerful and you were terrific. And I think you blessed a lot of people with an awesome performance that will resonate for a long time. And then you're on another wildly popular series / franchise in Psych. I mean, not one, but two franchises I mentioned off the top. What is it about Psych that really resonates with people?
You know, it's been something of a phenomenon to me. I mean, certainly none of us thought that when we made this tiny little pilot for the then fledgling USA Network that it would become, you know, what it has become. I think the spirit of the show sort of speaks for itself. It was created by Steve Franks, who in many ways, you know, kind of embodies positivity. His approach to life is just, it's so beautiful and aspirational. And it comes through in his writing and his approach to, you know, to making a show. And then you put together a group of people who all just really hit it off and came to love and respect one another. And so just a ton of love went into making that show. And we also realized, somewhat surprisingly, that we were being embraced as a series that families could come together and watch, like together. Like so many people told us over the run of the show, like, you know, the only time I see my teenager is when we watch Psych.
That's so cool to hear, right?
I think that's it. I really do feel like that's a key. Like, you know, we've managed to threaded this needle of like, oh, people our age can appreciate this because all the references remind us of our childhoods, but a teenager can appreciate it because these two fools are having such a good time and it reminds them of them and their best buddy. And so you have like multi-generational sort of viewing experiences happening. And then the show kind of got passed down. And that's why, like, when 12-year-olds now come up and recognize me as Sean, it just blows my mind. Like, you're 12. Like, you have no idea what we're talking about on the show. But I think what resonates is sort of the spirit of silliness you know, two grownups running around acting like children, and two best friends living out sort of a childhood dream. And doing it without, you know, any blood or guts or F-bombs or nudity. I think all of those things sort of came in together and made a stew that felt very right for a lot of people.
It's awesome what you guys have done and what you've created, and you also honor other genres as well, genres that you like, genres that people relate to and really gravitate to. What can you tell us about now the what'll be the fourth movie now? What can you tell us about where things stand there?
Yeah, I mean, I wish there was more to report. There is a script. You know, at one point we were toying with the idea of maybe doing 3 and 4 back to back, just because it's so difficult to get all these, to get everybody's schedules lined up and find a pocket of time. That ended up not happening because it was during COVID. It was difficult. It would have been weird. Frankly, I mean, you know, that fourth script probably wasn't as cooked as much as it needed to be, on top of everything. So the good news is I think the script is better now. And now it'll come down to, like, you know, the Peacock, finding some dough and, getting everybody's schedules aligned again, which, you know, we can always figure that part out, because it doesn't take us long to shoot these things. You know, we're very early, into a writer's strike, so it won't be happening anytime soon.
Yeah, it's too bad. It's too bad.
But maybe, you know, maybe end of this year, next year, it comes together. And, you know, the psych fans are so great, and they're so patient, and you know, they always let us know that the appetite is still there. So that's an easy part of the pitch to the Peacock. It's the same. It's basically the same dance that we've done for every movie. You kind of have to go in and remind them, you know, why psych is important, and, you know, how the brand has been around for so long, and how, you know, it's reached so many people, and you know, there's always turnover at these places. So, you know, you're always pitching a new group of execs who may or may not have ever watched psych. That's what happens when you last as long as we have, you know, that old guard is, you know, that was there with us in the beginning are all gone. So you keep getting passed off to new people, and then kind of singing for your supper a little bit, but it's worth it to us because we love our fans so much. And it's also worth it to us because those movies are basically like little mini family reunions, and they're a blast.
It's a blast to sit back and watch it and also see the trajectory of your career. And when you started, you had your name of James Rodet, and then you added James Rodet Rodriguez. Talk about the self-discovery that you had to get to that point. I know at one point in time, I had a couple of bosses that wanted me to change my name to Guillermo. And that was something that they thought, hey, what do you think about that? Is it something that you're comfortable with? Now, in the neighborhood that I grew up in, people called me Guillermo, but that wasn't my name. And with that process for me, I just learned a lot about myself and just about my background and about what I want in the future. What was that self-discovery process for you to get to the point that you finally did?
Well, it was heavily fueled by the pandemic, which sort of forced life to slow down. And, you know, I generally live my life very fast. I've got 10 things going on at once. It is who I am, and it's how I thrive. And all of a sudden I found myself with a whole bunch of time, a whole lot of stillness, and reading and thinking about stuff that I hadn't honestly thought about in years. And, you know, I was talking to my dad, and, you know, he was telling me stories about my grandparents that I'd never heard. And I just woke up one day and was like, why am I not representing? Like, I knew why initially I dropped Rodriguez, and it's because I was a kid coming out of college who had no idea how the business worked. And, mm-hmm. you know, a casting director and a TV executive who had absolutely no malice whatsoever were like, hey, you know, it would probably behoove you to have a whiter name because you look white and it might confuse mm-hmm. people. And this was in the 90s, and I don't even hold it against them. I think they were just trying to help me. And at the time, I would have done anything. Like, they could have said, you know,
sure.
if you chopped off your pinky toe, it might give you a leg up at these auditions. Like, I probably would have done it because I didn't know anybody. And the idea of becoming successful in this business was so daunting and beyond something that I could wrap my head around that I was taking every piece of advice I could. So I did it. And the next thing I knew, I was working and I built a career. And then, you know, 20 years in, I'm sitting there going, man, if I was starting my career today, A, nobody would give me that advice because they wouldn't be caught dead, you know, saying that out loud.
Right.
And B, it wouldn't have occurred to me that there's anything weird about being Rodriguez either, because there have been so many people now, especially in the Latinx community, that, you know, have kept their names and represented, and it wouldn't have even been something to think about. And so,
sure.
you know, the good news is that I was, you know, I better late than never. I wish I had done it sooner. I would have loved for my grandparents to have still been around, you know, to enjoy my work as a Rodriguez. But, you know, my dad is still here, and I know it meant a lot to him. And I think, you know, as best as I could express, like, you know, how I could totally see that, you know, how it could be perceived as like, this, you know, this woke thing that I did, you know, with an agenda behind it. Like, the truth is, I just felt really bad.
Mm-hmm.
It caught up with me. I had some time to think about it and really look inward, and it just became crystal clear that there was simply no reason for me to not use my name anymore. And so I did it. And I did it, you know, probably 20 years too late. But
what was the reaction of other people, say, in Hollywood and in the entertainment industry when you did that?
I would say it was 98% very positive
and
very supportive. Again, you know, Hollywood especially, I think, loves to put itself out in front of any sort of movement. And sometimes that's authentic and sometimes it's nonsense, but, you know, nobody's going to not support someone reclaiming their heritage on any sort of public platform, just because of the optics. But there were non-Hollywood people. I think there was the 2% of people that were, you know, really questioned, like, why now? And rightfully so. Like,
but James, part of it though is that, you know, you're established now. Like, you are established and successful, and you've had longevity. So it's not like you needed it to boost your career any more than it's already boosted, right? By the work that you've done.
Yeah, I can tell you that changing my name has not gotten me a single extra job. But the flip side of that coin that you're talking about is like, well, sure, you waited until you were successful and you had a career and you were established, and then it was okay to be Rodriguez.
Yeah.
So I get both sides of that argument.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, do you feel like the weight of the representation now, in Hollywood and having the name now attached to you?
I mean, it hasn't changed a ton, except in the way that I feel. I was never hiding my Latino-ness. I mean, I was nominated for Almas and Imogen Awards, and I presented, and I would do the occasional interview with, a publication that, you know, was sort of, you know, was Latino driven. It was like, it wasn't a secret. I just wasn't throwing my name out there.
Yeah.
So now I just think, you know, there's an element of pride that comes along with it, and it just feels better for sure.
Yeah.
You know, A Million Little Things was the first time that I ever played a Latino in my career. And I give DJ Nash credit for that, because he said, "Hey, why don't we use this from your real life? Like, let's make you half Mexican. Let's give you a Mexican father." Like, it was the first time that I was ever able to sort of marry the ideas of identity and my art into one character. And that was really cool too, man. Like, that was cathartic.
I bet.
Brought me a lot closer to who I really am. And I thank him for that, for sure. But as far as like the pressure of representation, like, I'm out there, 9 times out of 10, am I going to get a role that's written for a Latino? Still probably not, because there's going to be guys that just look more Latino than I do. And that's okay. Like, I probably wouldn't cast me either, but I'm certainly willing to talk about it now and carry the flag as best as I can.
Sure.
Because we need as much representation as Hollywood as we can get. Like, I would say as many sort of diversity initiatives that are happening right now, you know, the Latinx community is still, I think, needs more. So,
yeah. Yeah, well, what was it like for you growing up where you had half of your family that was Mexican? You mentioned earlier in the podcast that they were all Dallas Cowboys fans. Like, what was it like culturally for you growing up with having half that side being Mexican and growing up in San Antonio?
It was interesting because we were the only ones in San Antonio. Everyone else was in Dallas. And so it was basically a once or maybe twice a year holiday family gathering. And I was also the oldest grandchild. So for a while, there were no other kids. And it was just like once a year, I would be reminded like, oh, right, this is half of me. And they all speak Spanish to each other. And they love, you know, Tejano music, and this is part of me. Mm-hmm. Slowly but surely over the years, a lot of the siblings started marrying off and more white people came into the mix. And it became sort of more of a melting pot. And then cousins started getting born, and we really are more of a mixed bag. But when I was very young, not so much. You know, it was me and my mom, who's about as Caucasian as you can be, and then a family of Mexicans. Mm-hmm. And then you would go home, and we didn't speak Spanish in our household. And, you know, I grew up on an Air Force base, and there weren't a ton of other Latino children, and you kind of would almost, you know, forget. You just sort of normalize the fact that your life feels more white than it does, you know, Latino.
Mm-hmm.
Until the next Christmas, you know?
Right. Right. No, exactly. Well, that's what MJ and I, we always talk about our backgrounds and how we grew up. I mean, we had, you know, big families, and then, you know, learning how to speak Spanish, and then some of the traditions and such. But, you know, for us, and even just the point of this podcast is just, we want to highlight the Latinos who are out there, who are successful and who are seen as an inspiration and looked upon for what they do and how they've done it. And you certainly are that. I mean, you honestly are killing it right now, have been killing it. And this has just been such an enlightening conversation, just so generous of you to give us the time to talk to us. We covered a lot today, my friend. We covered a lot.
We kept it real. And honestly, look, the pleasure is mine. You know what a huge football fan I am. I think it's dope that you're out there, you know, crushing it in your own right. And I was happy to come together and talk about being Latinos with you.
Yeah. Hey, man, I appreciate it. Please come back again on the El Huddle podcast when we also have MJ as well. I know she would love to talk to you as well. And we can dissect more of the Titans, what we think of their offense and Will Levis. Maybe you'll be pumped beyond belief of how good he is, or you'll just say, this guy ain't cutting it. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Right. I'll be interested to see if he actually sees the field this season. You know, yeah, Tannehill stays healthy, and because that division is not great, you know, as long as we're striking distance from like a wild card, I can't imagine him bringing in the kid. But, dude, as soon as we fall out of it, I think you got to get him in there, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, why not? And think about that with the division of having Anthony Richardson, potentially Will Levis, right? C.J. Stroud. I mean, you got some young guns, and then obviously Trevor Lawrence. Stack, man, right?
Yeah.
So we could be looking at a bright future. Honestly, James, this has been an absolute pleasure, man. Honestly, come back again. Really proud of what you've been doing, and really enjoyed the combo. Thanks again.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it, Will. Thank you, sir.
In Huddle is a production of the NFL in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.